God, that was your stage.
Okay, all right. Okay,
I'm ready.
Hello, and welcome to Grapes and Grain Podcast. I'm Teeny.
And I'm Laura, and this podcast is about our favorite thing in the entire world,
alcoholic beverages. So today we're going to talk about one specific varietal or one specific style of wine and beer and drill sort of all the way down, give you everything you need to know about that one type of booze.
Yeah, and this style theme is going to be an ongoing theme we'll touch on in future episodes. A couple times a season, you'll hear us highlight a specific style or varietal. So today, we'll be talking about...
What you drinking?
IPAs and Syrah.
Yes. So two very different, obviously, types of booze. IPAs are one of the most popular styles in the world right now, or at least in America. And it's ubiquitous. Everywhere you go, you're seeing IPAs on the shelves. IPA is the number one most produced style of beer. So we want to dive into what it means, what the definition is, and what makes it cool. Why is it so popular? Why are everybody just drinking a whole bunch of hops?
Yeah, I know. Super delicious. Actually, IPAs were the beer that definitely made me fall the heck in love with beers. It's just so floral and marijuana-like.
Comes from the same plant family.
Duck.
There's some science in there.
Yeah.
And Syrah, there's another name for this varietal of wine, is there?
There is. I'm so excited you asked. So Syrah is also known worldwide as Shiraz or Shiraz. It's known as Syrah mostly from French origin and in America as well. And Shiraz is the name most used in Australia and South Africa.
Awesome. So is that what you're drinking?
Yeah, that is what I'm drinking. So I do have a Southeastern Australian Shiraz. It's 2015. I don't have much to tell you as far as tasting notes because honestly, I was looking for a pretty cheap Shiraz because I've made a jelly from it.
A wine jelly.
Yeah. So my wine jelly is thank you and going away gifts because as I've told you and... I'm moving to Australia in a couple weeks.
Breaking news. Laura's moving to the other side of the world.
I am. So it's all pretty new and fresh, and I'm only going for 6 or 7 months. But, yeah, going for work, and I'll be doing many interviews of winemakers and regions, and I'll try to pick up some good beers for you, too.
Yeah, you'll have to go, as we'll learn later, Australia is kind of a hot spot for growing hops, which is the dominant characteristic in IPA beers. So cool. That is exciting news.
Yeah,
cheers. Congrats.
Thanks.
I will tell you what I'm drinking. In the spirit of this episode, I am drinking an India Pale Ale, otherwise known as IPA. So this is going to be a beer from Stone Brewing Company.
Oh, I love Stone.
I chose this one not only because I get a bunch of free samples to my office, and so I didn't want to spend money on beer for this episode, but also because they've long been one of the leaders in brewing IPA. So Stone is based in California.
So true.
The West Coast IPA was, you know, the first movement of a subset of the beer that made it distinctly American and from place. So as we'll hear later, there are a million different subgenres of IPA, but this one is brewed with Laurel, Mosaic, and Mandarina hops.
Oh, I love Mosaic hops.
So it's called Scorpion Bowl IPA, and they said online they were trying to make basically a fruited IPA without using any fruits. So hops can have a really fruity characteristics, which we will also talk about later. And tropical IPAs are all the rage these days. So this one is actually really good.
Yum. Let me take a smell.
Yeah, you'll really get some citrusy, fruity types of things on the nose.
Cool.
And it's really, like, juicy. It's really good.
That. And Stone's one of my favorite, too. I think they have the coolest art. But, like, basically when I was old enough to start buying beer and I just didn't know anything about it, and I would go to the store and just pick really cool-looking bottles and labels, Stone was almost always one of the first things I reached for.
All right. Well, yeah, the tagline for this one is Scorpion Bowl IPA, Punch to the Stinger.
Punch to the stinger.
So, but it's also paired with like these beautiful flowers and turquoise and purple and a devil head. So pick it up at the store. It's really good.
Yeah.
All right.
Cool.
Well, let's do this damn thing.
Yeah, cheers. Well, as you mentioned, Syrah goes by two names. It's Syrah and Shiraz, but that's definitely not to be confused with Petite Syrah, which is its own thing. So Syrah is a type of grape. And Petit Syrah is a blend of Syrah with another grape called Polarson.
Which one do you like better?
You know what? I would have always knee-jerk said Syrah, but that Wine of the Month Club that Fleo has us in, there is a Californian Petit Syrah that came, and man, it was big and bold and delicious and beautiful. But I think that owes its roots to the Syrah that was in it.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So Syrah has actually been kind of like a dramatic grape, trying to figure out the lineage and parentage and like where it hails from.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stories about like the Persian city Shiraz being kind of the root for it. But there's a DNA study done in California. And, you know, like DNA don't lie.
Yeah, DNA don't lie. 23andMe and this wine.
And, yeah, all the famous cases of our day. I was thinking one football player in particular.
What?
What's his name? The Juice.
OJ.
OJ.
OJ. Oh.
OJ. Yeah.
The Juice.
You had me at Juice.
Juice. Yeah, I was like, you know him. It's something special to you.
Wow, well, that's almost.
Everybody knows OJ.
Didn't you have his, like, jersey?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did. It was pre-murders.
See, yeah, like, Ben's going to remove this part of the podcast so he's not like, I'm the hugest fan of OJ Simpson. No,
well, I thought that was, like, it's so funny. So, yeah, so DNA don't lie. It's, there's a study done in the Department of Viticulture and Enology at UC Davis, and they really dug into the background of it, and it is from the Northern Rhone. The two parental grapes are also from the Northern Rhone as well, so that kind of put an end to all of the dramatic storytelling of origin of this grape.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah. And when was that? They did that in the early 90s?
It was actually like 1998, 1999. So it was pretty late 90s, actually.
Yeah.
Which I kind of thought it was interesting for it being such a popular grape for so many decades that it kind of no one really knew much about it.
Yeah. Is it one of the like dominant ones that are grown here in America, like by where Berkeley is?
Yeah. No, totally.
Or Davis, so, UC Davis?
It is most predominantly grown in California in the U.S. and then also in France. But that is the largest produced grape from Australia, actually.
Oh, wow. Yeah. What a coincidence. This
has almost like I did this on purpose.
Yeah.
Almost like I studied this on purpose.
All right. Well, now tell me a little bit about what it tastes like and how that compares to the other Syrah, the Petite Syrah that you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, totally. Well, even within its own class of by comparison, there is a huge variety of what this grape can taste like based on the climate and regions it's kind of grown in.
Oh, yeah, for
so,
sure.
So,
terroir,
France,
if you will.
Yes. So the regions like in France or in Washington that are more mountainous and cooler climate, you get a little bit more structure as far as acids go in the grape, but it also grows really well in warm climates. So in Australia and Texas as well.
Oh, no.
Is, I would say, an up-and-coming producer of Syrah. But yeah, then it's a little more jammier, like the fruits get more ripe, it gets more sugar, it's higher alcohol, mm-hmm. more fruity flavors.
What makes it good for making jelly?
Honestly, so it's nothing specific to Syrah itself, actually. One of the ladies in the Grayson class I was taking, she said there's no such thing as a bad bottle of wine because if you open it and it's awful, you can just make jelly out of it. So I got this recipe from her.
Amazing.
So I just figured since you're adding 4 cups of sugar and boiling it, why start with anything too terribly expensive?
Yeah. We get some 2-buck Chuck jelly out
in
here.
Yeah, totally. Well, I like mulling wine over Christmas, but I'll still buy a decent wine because yeah. you're still drinking it pretty straight. You don't boil it, but like.
Can you get drunk from the jelly?
No, no.
You probably boil all the alcohol.
Yeah,
up, huh?
Totally. I do. I will tell you though. I accidentally took a big old whiff of this jelly over the stovetop as I was cooking it, and it went right to my head.
Oh, it's like you took one of those alcohol vapor shots.
Yeah, totally. It was so.
Don't
cheek,
try this at home,
so
kids.
Vogue. Total accidental. Cook in open spaces. So yeah, I don't know. It's so nothing specific to jelly itself, but I just thought it was special.
Yeah, it is.
For upcoming events.
So what does Petite Syrah taste like then?
Yeah, so both of them are typically pretty bold wine. The tasting notes on more aroma is common found is blackberry and coffee and leather. And then the taste is really earthy with like a black pepper note. So Petite Syrah definitely draws from that aspect of the grape quite a bit as well.
Very cool.
But the one I had was really inky, really bold, really dark. It's a thick skin grape, so yeah. I don't know. It's quickly becoming one of my favorite. I've actually heard a lot of talk in the wine industry and community about how producers should be creating more of it in Texas.
Why?
Because it is a warm weather grape, and it's really great, especially for being like cattle country here too.
With steak.
Like instead of getting a $50 cab or something, you should just get like homegrown Texas made Syrah and have that with your Texas cattle.
Yeah,
you know?
Get that leathery flavor
black
pairing.
Pepper with the
tastes like cowboy country.
Yeah, real tannin. Tannic with that fatty ass steak. Yeah, sounds delicious, right?
It does. Yeah, I'll have one cowboy, please.
Yeah, but I don't know. Are any hops for your IPAs grown in Texas, or is it
no? So the thing about Texas is it's a really terrible climate for growing basically any type of beer ingredient. Well, I mean, yeast. You don't grow yeast. Yeast just exists. And in fact, there's a brewery in Austin that we talked about last time that uses the wild yeast to make uniquely Texas beer. But as far as hops, no. Hops are a cold or a wet weather climate type of plant. So above or below a certain latitude is where they grow best. So Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and then you have England, Germany, the Czech Republic. Those are the great northern regions where to grow them. And then on the bottom, also Australia is a hot spot for growing hops, New Zealand, South Africa, that type of thing. So awesome. At the tips of the world is where you grow those. So hops are really what make IPAs a distinguishable and distinct style. So as the history of the style goes, there are, you know, there's one common legend that is taken down and people have a hard time verifying it. But basically, they talk about the genesis dates back to 18th century Britain and a tale of two cities, London and Burton-on-Trent. Or you can call it Burton-upon-Trent or just plain old Burton, not related to the snowboarding. So there was this dude, his name was George Hodgson of London, and he was the beer baron, shipping casks of ale to the British troops in India, right? Mm. So
Beer Baron? Was that his like self-imposed nickname?
I gave him that nickname In my mind, he's this giant beer baron.
Yeah, I like it.
But when his son took over the company, he messed it all up with his trade partners at the East India Trade Company. And so the Burton Brewers made their move. He messed up that relationship, and the guys from Burton were like, all right, let's get this business. So they brewed a pale beer. It was paler than what they were used to, and it was lightly hopped. So in those days, hops were used as a preservative because they've got specific oils and preservative agents in them. And that's why it's best to, like, drink IPAs fresh because the hops will deteriorate over time as it uses those agents and acids break down and oils break down.
Interesting.
So the beer was so wildly popular over there that they kept drinking it, and it ended up getting its own classification. So, you know, back in the day, they were hopping it. It was nothing like the modern interpretation of IPAs that we have now. But that's sort of where it got its name because they were shipping it to India.
Oh, neato.
Yeah. Now, I was looking for the American, like the first American IPA, and it's listed as Ballantine IPA. It was revived by Pabst recently, who owns that company or that that brand.
Oh, okay.
But the American genesis, what I found was that it was 1985, which seems really, really recent.
Yeah.
And just like everything, you know, Americans decide they wanted to do it a little bigger and a little bolder. So, like, the English IPA, I've got the definition here, you know, it was like very much part of the broader pale ale family. So in the brewer's portfolio, the IPA was just a little bit paler, a little bit stronger, and a little bit more bitter. Now in America, everybody's taken the bitter, the paler, and the I can't remember the other adjective that I just read. Anyway, bitter. It's way more bitter and way bolder. So
yeah, it is. Some of them, I feel like when they really started coming on trend in the last, like, I don't know, like 8 years or so, people really like took it to a flipping extreme.
Oh, yeah. Like so the IBU scale.
What is that? Yeah.
International Bitterness Units. And it's how you
super
measure.
Scientific sounding.
Yeah. It's how you measure the hoppiness or bitterness of a beer. And so, you know, anything considered lower than 30 is not very bitter, but every beer has at least a little bit of hops in it to balance out the malty flavors. There are beers that come out now that are over 100 IBUs, and like the IBU scale technically stops at 100. So,
yeah.
Like,
it's It's going to be like the ghost peppers and ghost chilies. They're just going to go crazier and crazier.
And they have, I think that people have come back off that a little bit because I just don't think that those are as enjoyable. And
I
honestly,
it's expensive too, putting that many hops in it.
Yeah, because not only if you're putting that many hops, you also have to put enough malt to balance it out. Ooh. So, yeah. What's the reputation of Shiraz like? And did I say it right or did I get the wrong one?
I mean, I feel like you could just call this grape anything and be somewhat in the ballpark. It's like Syrah, Shiraz, or Shiraz.
Shiraz.
I think kind of putting that like little accent on it. So it has a relatively recent story in the U.S. too. The first time you really see it in production is in California in the 1970s. So not that long before yours, but no one was really doing it at the time. Mm-hmm. These smaller, you know, everything was about Bordeaux, blah, 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 blah.
The haute grape.
As we've mentioned before, blah, 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 Bordeaux. in these smaller pockets, like in the Rhone, that were really most in Hermitage and were really just going in as sold as blends into Bordeaux blends. The California wine growers started taking some of those varietals and throwing them in these similar climates in California. And the first people to do it called themselves the Rhone Rangers.
Oh my gosh.
Is so on the nose and really funny.
And also, like, I love that because I'm a Texan.
Yeah.
Sounds like the Lone Ranger.
It does.
Well, that's awesome that California was a leader of that movement because they were definitely the leader of the IPA movement as well.
Yeah.
As I mentioned earlier, Stone Brewing Company was probably one of the more well-known brands. Lagunitas Brewing Company. Mm-hmm. I think they only have, when I went to visit the brewery, there were only a handful of beers that weren't some sort of variant of IPA. So that's like their main portfolio. And the West Coast IPA was actually the exemplary version of this style when it came to like America. Mm. Everybody wanted to brew a West Coast IPA because it was bold, in your face, almost like the antithesis of the popular like domestics.
Yeah.
And also it makes sense because hops are overwhelmingly grown in the U.S. Like more than 95% of all U.S. hops are grown in Oregon, Washington, and Idaho.
Oh, interesting. Well, I was going to ask you about Washington because that's actually a huge player in the game in the U.S. as well, specifically the Natchez Heights in Walla Walla, Washington, which is one of the coolest named AVAs in my home of Walla Walla, Washington. So Washington is actually the second biggest producer of Syrah in the U.S.
Nice. Today?
And I don't know about this specific date and time in history. No, I'm just kidding.
Modern times.
Yeah, in the modern era. It's similar, I guess, really. I didn't realize Oregon and Washington were so ideal, but I guess it's kind of like luscious and like on that side of the mountains and near the coast. And
right by the Cascades. Mm-hmm. Like there's actually, you may have heard of Cascade Hop.
Yeah, definitely.
It is signature of the growing plants up there. But I mean, when we talk about hops, it's like so crazy because there are so many different varieties. I was looking online to see if I could find like a number. A couple of the top distributors of hops, like the people who send them to the breweries, listed between 120 and 130 different varieties.
Dang.
But there are so many experimental hops being grown at any time, too. Like, they're all experimental blend number 1652 or whatever. So there have to be dozens more than that that maybe just don't have a specific name and are being sold widespread.
How do you judge a hop? How do you, like, classify, like, what are the qualities on a hop? Is it, like, similar to, because you mentioned it was the same class family as marijuana, too. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Well, it grows the same way. Yeah, they come in like hop cones that grow on vines. So it's a vine.
Oh, interesting. Oh, now that you mentioned, I've seen that at restaurants in like Denver and California. That was like their patio.
They are really pretty.
Yeah, patio plant. Cool. Okay, so it grows in vines.
So I don't know specifically. I've never worked for a brewery, so I've never been to like pick out the hops. But normally once a year, breweries will send their team up to the acreage. Normally it's pre-purchased because hops have been so in demand the last couple of years. Actually, the IPA was only the most popular selling style of beer since 2016, but the demand was growing exponentially in the years leading up to that. Mm. So traditionally breweries will send a team up to the acreage where they have pre-purchased the hop and the pounds of hops, and they'll go and they'll look and they'll make sure that they look nice. And, you know, all I can say is thank goodness Mother Nature hasn't gotten the best of hop country.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I feel like it's a pretty precarious, like, where all the luscious stuff is seems like really precarious, like, long-term, I guess, with these up-and-coming changes.
We need to take a break.
Quick word from our sponsors.
Hey, Laura, what are you getting into this weekend? Any fun plans?
Well, I'm going to head out to Iron Root Republic Distillery.
That's cool. What's happening out there?
Well, you know they do distillery tours every Saturday at 1, but since this Saturday is the first of the month, they're going to be open from 2 to 8:30 p.m., making cocktails all day. So, you know, I'm going to spend the whole day out there.
Oh, that's cool. Do they do that the first Saturday of every month?
Hell yeah, they do.
Sweet. Well, I know they're known for their whiskey. Is that what you'll be drinking?
Oh, man, they do so much more. They're going to have an epic Bloody Mary bar featuring their vodka, and they'll be making handcrafted cocktails with their delicious gin. Plus, they have live entertainment. And did you know the two brothers who own and operate it are out there shaking cocktails in person?
Shake it till you make it. Where are they located?
It's right around the corner in Denison, Texas. But if y'all can't wait till Saturday, you can find a bottle of Iron Root Republic whiskey at a Specs near you.
Thanks for listening to Grapes and Grain Podcast.
If you are a retailer or a producer and would like to sponsor us or have your product featured in our Whatcha Drinkin' segment, drop us an email at grapesingrain@gmail.com. That's grapes, the letter N, grain, at gmail.com.
Cheers!
We're back.
So you mentioned some major producers in the U.S. were Stone, is Pliny the Elder, is what? Who is that the name
Russian
of it?
River. Russian yes, River. Yes, that is that's a beloved beer, revered beer, I will say.
So what are there any other major producers for IPAs, like, well-known outside of California?
Yeah, actually, so as I mentioned, the IPA is just a broad category now. Yeah. That means basically a pale ale with extra hops. But now there are so many different types of IPA. You've got white IPAs, black, Belgian, session, imperial, fruit, sour, red, rye. You've also got the India Pale Lager, so the IPL. It's just gone off the rails of people interpreting that, varying that style. But the most popular one right now is the New England IPA. So we move from coast to coast. Wow. New England IPAs are basically throwing everything that we've known about beer brewing to the wind. A lot of brewers are kind of like, don't like this style because it's messy. It's defined by this really cloudy appearance. Mm. So that's the use of adjuncts that may be floating around, but they want it. It's also known as a hazy or a juicy IPA. And a lot of those hops are the tropical ones, like, for instance, in the snow that I'm drinking, that really produce the sweet, melony, pineapple-y, passion fruity, mandarin type of flavors.
That sounds really yummy.
And in fact, it's not just a fad anymore. This year, 2018, the Brewers Association added a definition for hazy or juicy IPA. It's going to be a category at the GABF competition this year, Great American Beer Festival competition this year. So it's officially a thing.
Very cool.
Yeah. What anything like that come to Shiraz? You mentioned you can call it a bunch of different things, but are there different interpretations, or is it pretty by the book, people who are producing them?
You know, it kind of varies by region. So out of Rhone, they're in California, where they're doing Rhone-style blends. A lot of times Syrah is grown specifically to be put into that style of blend and mixed maybe around, like, I don't know, a third of it or so. I would probably make up, but in the cooler regions and more mountainous regions, and then in a lot of regions in Australia as well, they're just selling it as it is. This is what you get. So Syrah, depending on how it's aged in oak or how it's grown in the climate specifically, will affect its notes. And then the labeling also kind of follows that too. So if it says Syrah on the label, it's definitely going to be either out of the Rhone or a California, probably Syrah done in that French style.
Okay.
But if you see Shiraz or Shiraz on label, it's definitely either from Australia, or if it's done in America, done in the style of
Interesting.
Australia. So
that is really cool. That's similar. Like, you don't hear about a lot of wine styles or varietals, that you can sort of put your unique spin on.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess it really depends on, you know, you could put it, are you that winemakers put a unique spin on anything? But yeah, it is, like, there is a lot of elbow room in the definition of it, yeah. Pretty much. There's some pretty big producers in California, like Ledge Rivers and Paso Robles and Wingap in Sonoma. And actually, recently when I went to visit UC Davis and a couple other schools, I stopped in Los Olivos and got a Stoltman Syrah that I mentioned in our cellaring episode. I have about 4 bottles. That's one of them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then there's some, like, Gramercy Cellars is a really popular one from Walla Walla, Washington.
Walla Walla, Washington.
But in Texas, Flat Creek Estate in Texas Hill Country, and also Salt Lick Cellars from the Texas Hill Country. I don't know. I was with you or Sarah when we went to Salt Lick?
Not me.
Oh, that was Sarah. But, yeah, that was one of my favorite barbecue places, and they were just kind of getting set up to do all their wine and stuff.
They have like a vineyard right there.
Mm-hmm.
We were there a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe that's why they're expanding to Grapevine.
I believe it is.
They're
honestly
building a restaurant in Grapevine, and if memory serves, they're also building Grapevines to go along.
Yeah, that's really cool. I also heard that rumor, but I haven't. Girl, we should do a field trip out to Grapevine. I feel guilty. It's like the winiest thing around here, and I like never go.
I grew up right next door to Grapevine, and I've never seen a Grapevine out there. There are a bunch of wineries on Main Street, but I don't think
it's plots like tasting rooms,
here.
Right?
Yeah, I don't think their plots are nearby.
Because I can't be driving to Grapevine just to drink and drive home. That's irresponsible is what that is.
Well.
But, so, you know, I mentioned earlier that, like IPAs in the U.S., Syrah has a relatively recent origin, but in Australia, they've been rocking that shit for a long time.
Oh, yeah?
How long? Yeah. Since around, they say that the vine entered Australia in 1832.
Oh, yeah. That is wild.
So it was introduced by this guy named James Busby. He was, I believe, a Scottish descent immigrant, and he brought all kinds of clippings from Europe with him into Australia and began, because I don't know if you remember in our first episode, we talked about how the trading ships basically drifted down to Australia, and a lot of those clippings came with them. And there's, like I said, a lot of argument in why it's called Shiraz. No one really knows for sure, but it is Australia's most popular red grape, and it took that lead probably around 2005, 2006. Oh, nice. Yeah, there's some good regions for it in Victoria, specifically in Heathcote, and then in Western Australia's Margaret River. But yeah, the super well-known producers are Penfolds, which that's been in production since 1844. It's just like, it blows my mind. Like, we talk about European history and like American history and Texas history a ton in school, but like,
never
Australia was doing their thing over there too. Like,
yeah.
The whole rest of the world is just kind of like doing their thing. So
it existed.
It did exist. Typical.
I wonder
narrow-sighted American over here.
Platypuses and Tasmanian devils.
Yeah, probably. That's why it's so
eating
wild.
All the grapevines.
Probably why they're so cool. You had to be pretty badass to survive all that back then. But yeah, and then the other one is, I always ruin, even when I was selling wine at the restaurant, I always mess this one up. Hinschke?
Is that a winery?
Yes. Mm. Henschke. It's the other family-owned 150-year-old Australian winery. Whoa. Winery, excuse me.
Winery.
I've literally had 2 sips of wine. it's the other really well-known Shiraz producer from Australia's too. Are there any internationally renowned IPAs?
You know, America has really become the hotspot for this style because, as I said, the IPA existed, but American IPAs are sort of the pinnacle. They're like where people go to get the IPAs now because of the creative liberty. And, you know, there was a couple years ago a fear that maybe IPAs weren't going to be feasible for a lot of breweries because hops became so expensive when this style took off. And even there was a bit of a hop shortage for a couple of years. But according to the Hops Growers of America, hop acreage and hop stock, so the land where they're growing hops, as well as how many pounds of hops are being kept by merchants and growers to be able to sell, have never been higher. So like hop acreage increased 96%. Since 2012. People started keeping these hops on hand so that if someone needed them or there was a shortage, they would be able to have them. So hops, there have never been more hops right now. And it's obviously a response
to
demand. I know. What a time to be alive. But I wanted to talk about some of the specific hops because they have really cool names.
Oh, please.
The most popular American hops, I'm told, are called the cool guy hops.
Ooh.
That's literally what they're called.
So totally the guys we date, the hops we date.
The hops we date. So, yeah, Citra and Simcoe, Centennial. You remember Centennial.
No, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
So the cool guy hops are Citra, Simcoe, and Centennial. And then the brewer yesterday at Old Town Brewing Company out in Lewisville was telling me El Dorado hops have become really popular because they're, again, they have a lot of fruity characteristics and are really popular for the New England IPA style. Also, Mosaic is one that has never fallen out of fashion. And then the popular European hops, if we're going Bohemia, it's going to be Saaz and Tettnanger. Mm. And then one from England, and I bring this one up because it's my favorite. It's called Fuggles.
Oh, that is a great name.
Yeah.
Is that your favorite tasting or just favorite named?
It's just my favorite named. Yeah. I don't actually know the... I'm not sure that I could drink a bunch of IPAs and tell you which ones were Fuggles.
I'm not sure. Like, don't quote me on this, but I'm not sure. Are Fuggles actually used for IPAs?
Probably not. It's more like English bitters and porters and stouts. So they're like really the more mellow ones. You're right. Look at this wino laying the knowledge on me.
I'm like reaching deep back in here to like the chest of memories. But when Flew and I very first started brewing beer, we went to the store and we had gotten an IPA kit. And I believe the store clerk suggested we try Fuggle. And we got it home and did a little more research. And we were like, that was totally, we wanted it to be an IPA. Yeah, it was... Not the correct pairing there.
Well, has there ever been any like fear that Shiraz would be like go out of not out of style, but like was there any fear that the style, the varietal might, you know, there was a hop shortage.
Yeah.
Trying to tie that together.
Yeah. A hop shortage. I see. I sense where you're going with this. You know, not really. It was kind of an undervalued, underused wine for a long time, just as far as just being used in other blends, pretty much. Mm-hmm. So really, I don't know if it's quite hit the heyday yet. I don't know if there has been an oversaturation or a shortage in demand. Or anything like that. But I really, and you can quote me on this, I think in the next 50 to 80 years, the climate in Texas for growing grapes is going to change significantly, and it's going to start mirroring a lot of the things happening in Australia,
mm-hmm.
I humbly believe. And I think Syrah is going to be a good grape to have around here. Around here.
Awesome.
I see it making more of a showing in Texas for sure. And you know what? I wanted to add, actually, too, if I may, you asked an earlier question about why... Shiraz for or Syrah. Oh, I'm getting it all swanky now.
Swanky.
Of why Syrah might be good for jelly. And now that I'm thinking about it again, about the tasting notes, about a lot of, there's usually a smoky flavor associated with it, or leather, or black pepper, and then like the really red fruits too. Like, hell yeah, that is the perfect kind of wine to be making this jelly out of and putting over cream cheese and having crackers and Christmas with your family.
Yeah.
So,
well, I'll toast to that.
Yeah, cheers to that. It's been a pleasure discussing IPAs and Syrah with you today.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I've learned a ton, actually. IPA was one of my favorites. I thought I knew a lot, but you just...
Yeah, it's so tasty.
Drop the knowledge
I on. Love the flavor of hops, and the great thing about that is that they taste so many different ways.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. All right. Until next time, y'all.
Thank you so much for listening. Definitely follow us on Instagram at Grapes and Grain Podcast. And that's _ breaking up each word.
Yeah. Follow us on Instagram. Check out our website. Be sure to send us some reader mail. What do you want to know about booze? Mm-hmm. Write to me and Laura, and we'll do our best to answer your questions. And tune in next time, pour a cold beer or a glass of wine, and we'll see you then.
Thanks so much. Cheers.
One more.
Yay!
Thanks for listening to Grapes and Grain Podcast. If you'd like to be featured in our future listener mail segment, please email any questions, comments, or anecdotes to grapesandgrain@gmail.com. That's grapes, the letter N, grain@gmail.com.
Absolutely. We love to hear from listeners and share fun stories and answer any random questions we get. You can also follow us on Instagram and Facebook. Find us on Instagram at Grapes and Grain Podcasts, _ between each word, and just search for Grapes and Grain Podcasts on Facebook.
Remember, that's grapes, plural, grain, singular. You can also find us online at grapesandgrainpodcast.wordpress.com to see blog posts that go more in-depth to each episode. You can also download or stream our podcast there and find lots of other content about beer and wine.
And of course, find us on patreon.com/grapesandgrain if you'd like to pledge a monthly contribution. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast today.
Cheers!
What you drinking?